Okay. Open your Bibles in Matthew 10. Matthew chapter 10. And I want to get a number of scriptures. Caleb, Matthew 10, 9 and 10. Going to get some more. Dwayne, Mark 6, 8 and 9. Brian, get Matthew 10:10. Zach, 2 Corinthians 9:5. Okay, so we started a series titled "The Master's Class on Pioneering." We're going right through the book of Matthew, chapter 10, which is a Jesus launching men into the ministry, and so we're looking at different aspects in pioneering. So now we come to a very important principle in pioneering, and that has to do with money. And there are money lessons that Jesus gives in Matthew 10, 9, and 10.
Provide neither gold nor silver, nor copper in your money belts, nor bag for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor staffs, for a worker is worthy of his food.
Okay. So Jesus in here, just by way of introduction, in launching men into the ministry is building a church. This is an incredibly important part of being able to build a church in fruitfulness, in gathering people, making disciples. Everything is affected by this issue, and that is, can you get dominion in money? That's the first part of it. And secondly, can you raise money? Those are two important issues. And so we're going to talk about some money lessons here. So let's begin. Let's talk about the principle of support. In our fellowship, we have a pattern of pioneer support. I can't speak for every church because they're other churches, they do things maybe slightly different according to their ability. You know, obviously the Prescott Church, we have more resources, so we do it probably a bit more. But the idea is that when you are going to announce someone, you have to give them the resources to get them to a point where they can build a work for God. And that is a very important issue in the beginning stages. So when we send people just as a bare minimum, we send people, we will give them salary, rent, living expenses, and of course their church expenses for a minimum of 3 months. And then I often say to guys, you know, I'm going to observe how you're working. If a guy there is slow and he's not a great worker or not getting momentum, then you need to get a job immediately. Other guys, we have extended that out. But nonetheless, the point of it is you want to enable the worker to be able to focus on learning the city, gathering some people, locating some people, maybe find a building. So you are giving them support. And the idea of that is you give them some time so they can get some people saved who will then begin to give themselves. And so if we do that, ideally in a perfect world, a guy would move from receiving support to the church and the converts then supporting that congregation. But if not, you've given the worker time to get things in place so now that he's ahead of the game. Guys who have to work, and the reason why we do it that way is that there are guys sent from other churches. They have to get a job the moment they arrive. So, of course, 8 hours a day are taken up, and it's difficult to learn the city. It's difficult to find a building, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the logic of support. What Jesus is talking about when he speaks about money, he's sending them And then he tells them some money issues. And what his concern is make sure your mind is focused on the harvest. Why are you there? That's the important issue. And so he uses a word, and that word is provide. And that is what you are responsible for yourself, or what you would gather in order to bring it. And so the idea of this is enabling a worker to focus on the harvest. That's the point. The point is not giving them pastoral welfare for a while, but the point is you can concentrate on gathering people. So Jesus' concern, the choices you make in money are going to determine whether or not you're effective in the harvest. So, of course, you need to eat, but he says, always factor this in. He gives some very simple commands of money, and he says, what you choose about money, how you think about money, what you do with money is going to determine whether or not you are effective. And so this is an important issue in pioneering, is if you can, in pioneering, you hopefully are not trying to enlist people in multi-level marketing. You're not trying to build business, do side jobs. You're focusing on the harvest, so you're supposed to be pioneering. Okay, let's talk about working and pioneering. So, in a practical sense, is that many men, they need to get a job, whether that is out of our church at the 3-month mark, the 6-month mark, or whatever. So, in the job that you choose, of course, the point here Jesus is saying, when he's saying don't take extra, is this idea, my work and finances is the minimum to get by so that I can concentrate on the ministry. Mark 6:8-9.
And Jesus commanded them that they should take nothing for their journey save a staff only, no scrip, no bread, no money in their purse, but be shod with sandals and not put on 2 coats.
Okay, Mark 6 is the companion scripture to Matthew 10, and he's talking about this is a stripped down lifestyle. Is you're not taking extra. You're not focusing on luxuries and the reason why. So here's several issues. Number one is some of you have to settle this. If you're not married yet, keep this in mind. If you marry pampered princess who has to have everything, life's going to be difficult for you. Is because keeping her in the style to which she is accustomed is going to be difficult. If you in yourself have to live a luxurious lifestyle, it takes money to live that kind of life. And so if you can learn to live at a minimum and prosper over time, then you're going to be ahead of the game. And so this is a very important issue, is so that you can focus on the ministry. Pastor Mitchell, when he first went into ministry, he said that when they were in Wickenburg, that was where they first went into ministry, that he worked 2 days a week and they barely got by. But what he describes is that by only working 2 days a week, it was with that extra time that he studied through the basic Bible doctrines and got a foundation. There are things that are in his ministry today because he studied the Bible and understood some things. And that was, so here's the choice. He could have worked more and had more stuff, but the ministry would have been diminished. That's the choice here. Which is it that gets diminished? Your lifestyle, you diminish that so your ministry can increase. Or do you diminish the ministry so your lifestyle can increase? And I, you know, very, very simply is if you're going to diminish the ministry, there's no point in doing it. Because all you're going to do is be frustrated. And then, of course, you're going to frustrate your people. So that means then Jesus is preparing them. These are disciples. They're launched into their first round of ministry. He's preparing them mentally for what it takes. So, a number of issues. Debt is toxic to the ministry. I mean, do the math. If you are committed in your finances, if you have to put out for credit card, auto payment, $200 a month, $500 a month, $600 a month, you're already making it harder. That is the issue. So you need to deal with debt issues, lifestyle expectations. What kind of house do you have to live in? What kind of car do you have to drive? And then, of course, the idea of budgeting, and so these are issues. When you don't deal with those kinds of things, I had to deal just recently with a long-term experienced pastor who has never dealt with the mentality of debt and purchase. So, because has not learned to restrain himself, then the problem is he starts making bad decisions in pastoring. It's just, it affects the ministry. It's not an either or. It's not, this is my lifestyle decisions and this is the ministry. They bleed over. And then, of course, you raise questions in people's minds. It just makes life harder. So the point is not that God is trying to make you poor for the rest of your life. That is not the point. The point is, God is trying to give you the greatest chance of succeeding in ministry. And that is the point that you have to understand. So, the difficulty for many men is when they're pioneering, they observe, it's the same with their parents, but they observe perhaps men who've been in the ministry for decades. And they say, well, look what he drives. Yeah, but he spent 30 years getting to that point. So, you know, I've been married 6 months, and so why can't I drive that, dress like that, live there, et cetera, et cetera? That doesn't make sense. Is that you make decisions now for long-term good, and this is the idea, is that you adjust your lifestyle. And my wife and I, we have never ever in our lives been in debt. We made a decision before we got married. We have never owed anyone any money apart from a house payment when we bought a house. That was the only time we have ever had debt of any kind. And so because of that, when we went in Pioneer, it was very easy. Moving was an easy decision. If they asked me to move, it's like, yeah, I can leave in an hour. You know, it didn't take a lot. I'll load up my 73 Corolla. We'll be fine. It made it easy. No, so when I went in the ministry, it made an easy thing. I went out, when I went in the ministry, I in Australia, I think I was the last guy that went out under full-time support. And so full-time support was, I got paid $275 a week. That was total. I didn't get extra for utilities, housing. I got $275 a week. And then it went like this. Every 90 days, my salary was slashed 25%, which gave me a tremendous motivation to witness. Like, you gotta get saved, man. I gotta eat. But the point was, that meant we could live. My wife and I went there. We got a tiny little place. We could live there. It was very easy to do. And when my salary was being slashed, it didn't kill us. The church was taking in a little bit of income that I could use to supplement that. And then finally, I had a skill. I'm a glazier by trade. I got a job under contract. I could make what you call stained glass windows here. And I did that. It was very adjustable. But I could live at a low level. So that meant that I could spend time outreaching. I could spend time learning the Bible and how to preach. But those were decisions. And so the point was, God did not say, Greg, I want you to go in the ministry because I want you to be poor as a church mouse for the rest of your life. This scripture is, Greg, I want you to set yourself up for future success. And that's true with money. Is the whole point is, do you have to prosper now or later? And so that's the choice you make. So the third issue has to do with raising money then, which is connected. First is how you expect to live. Now he moves into another important money issue, and that is you have to be able to raise financial support. Matthew 10:10.
Nor bag for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor staff, for the worker is worthy of his food.
Okay, so the worker is worthy. He's talking about you going into a new area and having the ability to cause other people to want to invest in your ministry. And that is a very important issue. So this means that an important part of ministry is you have to have the ability to raise money. You have to have the ability to cause others to want to give to the work of God, which will, of course, in some ways, affect your finances as well. So, very simple. You can't stay on support forever. That's a very, very simple issue. There are guys that they are on support, and they are still sending in every expense to the mother church. Now, me personally, I would be embarrassed to do that. I can't live like that. I'm not, God forbid if I should ever be out of work and not have a job and become a beggar, I think I would die. What is the scripture? I'm too proud to beg. So, you have guys that it's just a given. They're expecting the mother church. Of course, you're going to pay every bill. And of course, you're going to send me money. Personally, I'd be embarrassed to do that. But nonetheless, Jesus is saying that's not going to work. If you are worthy, if your ministry warrants it, you can get people to invest in your ministry. And if you can't do that, then it's going to hurt you. So raising money has two sides to it. The first of which is people having confidence in you. Okay? People have to have confidence. Confidence comes in a number of different ways. I mean, I'll do a whole lesson on this to bring this out. So, number one, it depends on how you live. So, we have pastors that they hurt themselves. They're trying to get their people who are, working minimum wage jobs, but everything they own is Tumi and Prada, and they're flashing money. That's just foolish, because it doesn't give confidence. The people are going, where is the money going? That's an issue. You have to have people. Then, of course, confidence is not only how you live. Confidence is in wise decisions. When you challenge people to give for something and it works out, that gives you confidence for the next time. You get guys that they raise money for stupid things, or they raise money for things that are going to be beyond them, and then they're not able to finish it, not realizing that the next time they stand up and say, hey, we need money, or they raise money for one thing, telling the people it's going to go for one thing, but they actually spend it on something else. And then they got to come back and go back for the first thing that people already gave for. So there's no confidence. Or to me, the stupidest offering in the world is the pastor saying, we're going to take an offering for our debt. We're in debt. It's like, wait a minute, I can't do that in my house, right? I can't raise it. I can't say, look, I spent too much, and so try that at work. I'm going to take an offering for Greg's bills. How many of you want to give for Greg's bills? Because I was stupid and spent too much. Right? Your people can't do that. So the issue is confidence. It's like, wait a minute. We're giving. Why aren't you budgeting? So that's a confidence issue. The second is a personal dominion issue. You have to have a dimension in you of God. You will not be able to have a dimension of God if you cannot budget, control your spending, and get out of debt. You're going to struggle. So you have no personal dominion over your own flesh, but now you're going to challenge people. You're going to try to raise it. It's just not going to work. It begins with you. And then secondly, is there's a part of this is a supernatural dimension in money. Some of you here, we've talked, two of the lessons have been about a supernatural dimension, having evidence. One of the ways that you can have evidence is I have either debt or I have a financial need. My job is not good enough. There's a crisis vehicle I have to have, et cetera, et cetera. Can you contend and lay hold of God for a miracle dimension? And this is why you want to have that now, because when you go out, you're going to be on limited support. Your personal support is going to shrink. Church support cannot continue. You have to have the ability. And if there is not a dimension that moves people, there is a supernatural dimension that is in the man that when he stands up, people supernaturally respond. Faith, there are people that believe. They say, yes. He challenges them about giving seed, and there's something in them that says, yes, I'm going to do that. If you don't have a supernatural dimension, you're going to say, we need to give. And you're going to get $1.17 in. So these are factors. Jesus says, money. And then it's my observation. It is incredibly rare to have a man that is fruitful, effective in making converts and disciples, but he's bad with money. It's incredibly rare. Almost never happens. The usual pattern is guys who struggle with money, they struggle with conversions. They struggle in the ability to gather people in a solid core because money is a supernatural dominion. So then moving on beyond that is it has to be in raising money. Raising money has to be a conviction. You have guys that it's clear that they're embarrassed about asking people for money. They're embarrassed. They kind of mumble and hurry through the offering because you have people in I observed in missionaries that did not do well were missionaries that felt sorry for poor people. And they would feel bad about asking poor people for money. Not me. I have a conviction, and the conviction is I am doing people a favor by asking them for money. Because biblically, that is how God blesses you. The greatest thing I can do is challenge you biblically. I don't have hesitation. I don't care how poor people are. I will boldly declare the word of God. I came to that conviction. So Jesus says, if you go, you have to also be prepared to raise money, be able to ask people for money. 2 Corinthians 9:5.
Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren to go to you ahead of time and prepare your generous gift beforehand, which you had previously promised, that it may be ready as a matter of generosity and not as a grudging obligation.
Okay, so this was Paul, and you read in Numbers of the Scriptures is Paul has asked them for money. He is preparing them to give money. He is following up on his request for money. He's giving directions and money. You study those scriptures for yourself. Paul had no fear about that. So, final thought is the ultimate aim. The ultimate aim, as far as a pastor and money, is that the pastor should be a full-time pastor. I am a pastor. That's all I do. I don't have a business on the side. I'm not a consultant for other companies. I'm not multi-level marketing. And so that means full time. Thank God. Wouldn't it be bad if I came on, if I came tonight and said, folks, I don't have a sermon tonight because, man, I made a lot of money this week. or, you know, Pastor, we really need counseling. Sorry, can't help you, but I got to meet a client. That's not helpful. So the aim, ultimately, is a full-time pastor, and so this is the aim. If a pastor will get financial dominion, deal with personal expectations, debt issues, all those kinds of things, then it will be, God will bless as he goes. People will have confidence, will invest in his ministry so that he can be full-time, which then blesses the congregation. And that is the aim that we have. And so Jesus says, you're going to decide some money issues that will affect your whole ministry. Okay. I shotgunned through lots of different issues there. So let's open for questions.
If you were, excuse me. If you were a working pastor, which I'm sure there's many of them, if your hours were early morning, how would you put the morning prayer meetings into that? What would be your strategy?
Yeah. So, you know, it's going to make it more difficult. Obviously, ideally, you would want to have a job that would enable you to pray. So those are issues in choosing which job to take. That's a crucial factor. Let's talk about several things. Let's back up a bit. So number one is if you have an option, if you say as a long-term goal, I want a pastor, then having a skill that enables you to either choose, have flexibility, or you can choose, you know, determine more of your hours would be a better fit, if possible. And then the second thing would be that you have to, you have to have confidence in God. Surely it is God's will to be able to build a church. You have to have a job with hours that are suitable. We have guys that I went to a city and, you know, someone just told me about one of their pioneers that went to a city, but he can't, his job requires him to work Wednesday nights and all of Saturdays and sometimes Sunday night. That's just not going to work. You can't. So it's obviously harder. Back to your question. So you would have to make other arrangements. Either you have to pray extremely early, and sometimes you have places that's what guys do, is that they will have their own prayer meeting extremely early because all of their workers are, you know, starting at 6. If everybody in your church starts at 6 and you set your prayer meeting at 7, it's probably not going to work. So you could adjust your own time, or you could come to a conclusion on, ultimately, is this job healthy in the long run, building a church? So you have to choose. Somebody else.
How do you correctly, with a small church or a pioneer church, how do you pull an offering or just standard service offering with dignity? What's involved in doing that? You mentioned what not to do, or you're scared or... timid, but.
Yeah, in a pioneer church is that you first of all you can use the offering as a mini teaching moment. Every offering you can put in some basic principles of giving, and then you know the whole thing in pioneering is when you are first starting out. You are not majoring on will a man rob God? You're going to burn in hell if you're not giving today, right? So it's a positive. This is why it's in your best interest. And then so you use that as a mini teaching moments. That's the real way to look at it. But then on the other hand is that you can't get people to do what you don't preach and teach. So your preaching and teaching is an important part. You are laying foundations, and then your offerings are reminders of those things. Or you are, and then of course you are connecting. You got to make sure that people understand what's the point of it. What are we going to do with the money? right? Today, we will take the offering after the outreach reports. It's very deliberate, because this is what we do with our money. So you're giving people, we use this for our outreach last night. This is what our outreach cost. It takes money to do what we do. You're giving them that basic understanding. And it's very short. Offerings should be very short. Guys, the mistake they make is they take conference offerings in their church every service. And that just doesn't work. You'll notice it's very, sometimes people from outside when they come and observe our regular service, our offerings are extremely short. Right? I don't have to pull. I'm not, because, and I think that's the mistake. Guys who don't preach and teach well, then they think they got to hammer. And I'll let you on a little tip. There's nobody sitting there. If you go on for 15 minutes, there's no one sitting there who wasn't going to give, who then says, oh, I should give. Wow. At the 14 minute 37 mark, they finally got it. That doesn't happen. Line upon line, precept upon precept. That is how learning comes, a little at a time. Yeah.
When you first start pioneering, a lot of people obviously have Bible studies in their homes and stuff. Do you pull an offering or anything for that?
Not in a Bible study. If it's a church service, yeah. So that's a differentiation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people have church in their house. If you have church in your house, you do everything that you would do in a church service. Mm-hmm. Because church is a part of worship. I mean, offering is a part of worship. But not a Bible study. You know, Bible study is different.
Would the what you were saying about lowering the lifestyle, would that be a good principle to have even if you don't necessarily feel called to preach, just for life in general?
Well, yeah. I mean, the issue number one is if you don't have debt, life becomes much easier, right?
Because the
borrower slaves. I don't have stress. I don't stress about money because I don't owe anybody any money. And then the second thing, it has been for years and years and years, neither do I spend all my paycheck either. I don't do that. So that's, therefore, it gives you a cushion in life. So my life is not ruined if I, you know, the power was out. I came home the other night. I was in Phoenix, came home, the power was out, undid my garage door, and when I try to move it back, unbeknownst to me is the wire came off, you know, $310 like that for them to come fix it the next day. So, but if I don't owe anybody any money, and I don't spend all my salary every week, $310 doesn't wipe me out. Right? I'm not standing that will work for garage door repairs. Right? So it's a wiser way to live. That's first of all, just life is much easier on you, and then of course, then you can plan for the future. Is I can, if I decide that I want to do something to my house, I want to buy new furniture, I want to buy a vehicle, is that I can do so, and it still is not ruining my life, is not stressing me. I'm not fighting with my wife because we bought a couch, and now we can't afford to pay it, right? So it just helps you in every area of life.
How much do you want to vocalize the church finances to the congregation? Like, how much do you want to vocalize the needs? How much do you want to vocalize, you know, the bills or the income and expenses?
No, not. It's not a matter of specifics, but you have, if you use small teaching moments, you use small teaching moments to give them the understanding. No, we don't, folks. We need $4,731. You don't give them that, but you there are people that are they are unaware in life that anything costs money, right? Is any, so in offering or in sermons, you're, you know, good things in life take money. Is we have to rent this building, when you see flyers, we have to pay to have those printed. We rented a hall for an outreach, so that you're doing that in general terms, not, you know, the hall costs $179 per hour. It's not specifics in that way. Or you have, it all depends. You know, you you have, when I was preaching on world evangelism, I give a general idea. Is sending someone overseas is it often costs us $60,000, around that, by the time that they get a building and are ready to start. So that's a round figure. I mean, that varies according to the city, but that's a very common figure. So because people have no clue, they've never done anything like that. They have no clue how expensive it is. So you can give some of those kinds of things, but it's not a matter of giving them an income sheet or an expense sheet.
Do you also see men who get a good offering are very personally liberal as well?
Usually, it's in, over long run. I mean, you can have a tightwad occasion, have somebody give a good offering because of what's going on in their life, but over time, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so the point of this is, over time, if you can't raise money, there's something wrong in some way. You gotta look at that. You lack dominion. You're not giving them confidence. You're, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep. Does financial debt disqualify you from being sent out?
Well, number one is that there are different. First of all, there are different reasons for debt, different levels of debt. Is you have people that medical debt. Medical debt is not a personal choice. Right, it's like, man, I really would like to get in medical debt. I would like to owe the hospital a lot of money. That's awesome. So that's I don't consider that in the same way. But of course, it depends on their basic, what it costs to live. I took over a church. It was the first time I ever took over a church after I pioneered, and they had planted a guy out. And he was in personal debt, and I sat down with him, and we did the math. What does it cost you to live every week versus what is your income every week? And, I mean, this is going back, good grief, is 1987. 1987, it seemed like the differential is he was, I'm trying to think, I think it was like $700 a week short. Every week. And it's like, no, this is not going to work. That's mathematically impossible. You can't. You should not be in the ministry. You should come home, sort out your debt, because there's no, that was an unworkable situation. So debt, yes, I do ask people about debt. I ask concert directors before they come on about debt. People that are wanting to go out, I speak about debt. And so while I don't demand that people are 100% debt free, is it workable? Mm-hmm. There are people, they have, yes, there's a small payment. So it's obviously any amount that has to go out, you make it harder on yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So the aim, and what I say to people is that in my experience, most people who make a choice to get out of debt, in most cases, along the way, God does miracles for them, just because that's pleasing to God. Especially if you say, God, I want to preach the gospel. I have debt. I need help. I want to get out of debt. You know, the Bible shows us that God is a merciful God. Peter said to Jesus, Lord, we need money for taxes. So it's like, why didn't you save for taxes, Peter? Right? But he didn't do that. He said, go catch a fish. And then there's miracle money there. So that shows me is that God, he helps foolish people. And that's good news. Can you say amen? Is that he helps us. So that's a good thing.
Yep. Have you seen a church thrive in an area that's pretty poor? Or should you try to avoid?
Well, I've seen churches thrive in poor areas, but that let's differentiate. So, I've seen churches thrive in a place where the economy is very poor. In other words, most of our churches in South Africa are in the poorest places, right? Or you have nations that is incredibly poor. In America, what I say to people is the issue is not the poverty level, it's the welfare mentality. Okay, so there's a different thing. So you can go to people, everybody is picking lettuce, they're making minimum wage. You can build a church there, you can thrive, God will help you, God will help them supernaturally. They're working, they're just not making a lot of money. Okay, however, if you go into an inner city area where the expectation of the people is someone is going to give me everything, it's going to be difficult to build a church there. So that's why I say to people when they go to a big city in America or other Western nations, you don't want to locate in the welfare area, which is generally the poorest area. And that is, of course, there's going to be struggles in money. But on the other hand, the people who are coming in, you're telling them to give, but their entire life has been the government or somebody else gives me money. What? Me give money? Right? And then they're coming to church expecting you to give them money. And so what I say to people is that we say, locate on the edges. So here's the real poverty area. We need to reach those people. This middle class area, locate close to it so you can pull from, but not necessarily. But if I locate in the middle of the hood, if I locate in the middle of welfare land, middle class people, you know, hey, come to the hood to go to church. No, why would I do that? But if I locate on the edges, people from the hood are not necessarily averse to coming. In the general rule, people don't have a problem going up, they have a problem going down. And that's just the way it is. In South Africa, you had people that they're living in little dog boxes, but it's a house, it's a real house, but then they would look down on people who were living in a tin shack. Right? You wouldn't get those people, hey, come to the shacks, to church. It's not going to happen. But people in the shacks don't have a problem going there. Now, that's human nature, so you use common sense. Zach?
I know you, Caleb, asked the question about vocalizing church finances, but I've seen in churches before where it's like long-term, larger goals, they do talk about more openly, whether it's like a building or something like
sure.
that they want to buy. Is that a bad idea? Like, I've seen churches have it on the back wall, like
no.
reaching our goal or whatever.
No, that's not a bad idea. So the point in raising money is vision. People have to have a vision. What are we going to accomplish? There's a reason why we have on the bulletin board the cities in America and around the world. We have maps. We have lists of churches because we're giving vision. There's a reason why before the offering we say, got a report from our pioneer, and this is what happened in their outreach. That's what our money's going for, is you're giving people a vision.
So amounts aren't necessary to do that?
No, not necessarily, unless you are, people have, building is a different issue. They have, they often have a specific amount that they need for a certain building goal. That would be different. But in general, I mean, you don't give amounts for everything in life.
Yeah. So, like a part of casting vision is obviously we'll talk about evangelism a lot and our outreaches. So when you're pioneering, obviously you can't necessarily point to a church you planted already, obviously, and you have new converts who don't even really go to outreach. How soon are you like really encouraging them to come to outreach? Like right away?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's an important part of salvation is getting people in outreach. Absolutely. Now, not everybody will. So that's a whole lesson in itself is getting people on outreach. That's a skill. That's a vision. That's a revelation. There's a whole bunch of things involved. But more to the point, you can, again, there are people that are ignorant in how life, there are people that don't realize it takes money. Life operates on money. So then you are, as I said, in the offering in small things. So yeah, we did outreach last night. It's very common. We rented a building. That took money. That's what we are using our finances for, money. This building costs money. You're giving small bite-sized pieces in Revelation. You don't give an entire list. You choose one or two small things. You put it into them. Somebody else?
Is it appropriate then to come to the conclusion that there's seasons of life then where you saving money is not a priority any longer? It's not time to save. You mentioned packing the 7-3 coral and being able to move.
Mm-hmm.
On your salary, you weren't concerned then with putting money aside for that season. You understood. Is that true?
Well, I mean, the bottom line, at that season in life, there was no money to, you know, how poor was I? You know, I had a 73 Corolla that it got such good gas mileage, I actually needed to fill it up with oil and top it up with gas, if you understand. And so we were so poor, I could only afford oil, I think, every second week or something. And so it was actually a miracle of God, and I'm telling you, Toyotas are incredible. It was the blessing of God. Is there were times, by the time I could afford oil, there was nothing registering on the dipstick. It was like, this is bad. Wow. So it wasn't an issue. I mean, I was incredibly poor at times. Yeah, incredibly. But even whatever level, we lived within our means. Still, there was no other options. We adjusted our lifestyle, where we lived, what we did. We made it. And for future.
Understand the future.
Yeah, so you don't have to be. But I think, you know, that was an extreme. But then other times in life that we did save. My wife is very good with money. And so we saved. Even, you know, I think saving it's a biblical principle that you should be saving at whatever section of life you're in. That can be a small amount, but you should be setting money aside. That's a good thing to do. Yep.
You mentioned owning a business when you're a full-time pastor is not a good idea. When you're starting to work out of getting off of support, is that a bad idea?
Well, okay, let's clarify. So I can't say across the board. You, because you have guys that they have a business that is either so skilled, it's so set in place. You have guys that have businesses, but it runs itself in many ways. Or you have guys that their skill is in their business is so rare that they can give very little time investment. The bottom line, most businesses, as you can appreciate, are time consuming. It is because you have to do the work, you have to do the bidding, you have to do the paperwork afterward. So for most people, most businesses in general would not be compatible with pastoring. So that but you just got to factor that into your skill set, to the type of business. That would not be true 100% across the board. And there are some businesses that are incredibly flexible in their skills. Yeah. Okay, that'll give you plenty to chew on.